We should be live. Let's see here. How's everyone doing? Can you guys see us? Can you hear me? Let me know in the chat if we're live and you guys can hear us and see us. YouTube is trying to switch everyone over to their new live streaming studio, and it's beyond bad. You would think for so many billions, they would be able to create some good software. Can't do it. I think we're live. I think people can see us. Let me know in the chat, guys, if you could see me. All right. Pete Meredith says we are live. Great. Awesome. Hello from Texas. Dimitri says, yes, we can. Excellent. Let me close off this window then. And we can get rolling. How's everyone doing this Tuesday afternoon for me? Morning, evening, wherever you are in the world. Hello to everyone in Australia, in Sydney, in the US, in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, wherever you are. Welcome. Hello from South Wales, from St. Pete, Florida. All right. Harper's Ferry, from Spain, from Perth, from Serbia. Canberra, Sydney, sound and vision is good. Audio good, cool. Sussex, Liverpool, Australia. All right, great. Kent, England, Massachusetts, Maryland. Hello, Alan, how are you? Young Blood, how you doing? Aussie 100% from Adelaide, South Australia. I wonder, is Victoria and Melbourne still on strict lockdown, guys? Is the rest of the country operating?
Saw a horrific video from Victoria.
Yeah, it's like a police state there. Sanja says, Peter, your dog is so cute. Oxford, England, where it's hot, hot, hot. Mm. Alexander Mercurius in London. York of London, you say it's really hot there, huh?
Very hot. It's extremely hot. It's been, and it's a heavy heat in London because it's obviously a big city and we do have open spaces, but perhaps it's rather densely populated. So it's very humid and we're on the sea, or near the sea. So it's rather sticky and can be rather uncomfortable. Many people love it though, and they go out into the parks and you see people sunbathing and wearing light clothing and all this, because of course most of the year it's overcast here.
All right, Goran from Croatia, how you doing? From Tallinn, I've actually got the Croatia magic mug about to go on the site soon. We have in Moscow, where it's also hot. I believe it's a really good summer over there. Host of RT's Crosstalk, Peter Lavelle. Peter, how you doing?
It's the best summer that I've been here for 22 years. This is by far the best summer ever for me. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's hot, but it's partly cloudy. So it's not oppressively hot. So it's ideal. A little bit of breeze out there. Perfect.
All
nature's
right.
Air conditioning.
Okay. Hello from South Africa. I'm also interested to see what's going on in South Africa with the lockdowns. I hear it's also pretty strict there as well. Let's see. Tell Greece government to go after Turkey. Yeah, there's some stuff going on in the Mediterranean. Absolutely.
Lots going on. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll cover that. But today we are going to cover Obamagate. I'm not even going to call it Russiagate anymore, guys. It is Obamagate as far as I'm concerned. The Russiagate chapter is closed. This was all about Obama. This was all about that Oval Office meeting. Obama, Biden, Sally Yates, Comey, perhaps Strzok was also at that meeting. And Peter, you were saying before we went live that Pelosi is now once again trying to stoke the fears of Russian election meddling. China, she said, is okay. China's okay, but Russia is not.
And well, we had this intelligence assessment at the end of last week. It's Russia, Iran, and China, but only Russia seems to energize the resistance. it's such a broken record. I mean, and the interesting thing is that if you already bought into this, it's fine, you believe it. But if you don't, I mean, it's just talking at cross purposes right now. I mean, what was the Mueller report all about then? What was its purpose? And particularly since people that were aware of it, they knew that everything was a hoax way before he even got started. So they're just going to perpetuate this. It really shows the poverty of their position and how insecure they feel that they have to use this ridiculous hoax. It's turned into a cult. And it's just something, it's an article of faith. It is delusional. And that's where we are. And I'm not really surprised, because Trump is inching his way back up in the polls. So they have to pull out their tried and tested and failed approach here. I mean, it's just constantly pounding away at it. I only want to comment on it because I think it's so delusional. It's boring. It's really boring. Mm. But that's what they have.
All right. Hello, the chat from Slovenia. Hello to Magnesia from Cape Town, Alexander. Sally Yates. Sally Yates is scapegoating Comey. I think Comey is going to be the first one to go down. I'm saying it here. I think Comey will be the first one to go down. I think Sally Yates has hinted at that. I think Lindsey Graham is fine with that too. And I think the Democrats will be fine with that as well. What do you think?
I think that's very likely true, in the sense that Comey, because he was director of the FBI and was involved in everything, I mean, he was the key executor, if you like. Nothing could have happened without him. He's obviously being set up as a fall guy. But let us be under no illusions. Sally Yates is scapegoating Comey. Sally Yates' responsibility is simply enormous. She should have gone into that Oval Office meeting, heard all this nonsense being spouted about Flynn, heard all about the Logan Act, and said straight away, Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, I'm very sorry. There's absolutely no sign of improper activity by General Flynn. And this Logan Act business is absolute nonsense. And I insist on the investigations against Mr. General Flynn being ended, because there are no grounds to them. And I've seen this intelligence assessment about Russian hacking. That is a completely separate affair. But in terms of collusion between Donald Trump's campaign and the Russians, there is no evidence at all. And as the person in charge of the Justice Department, I say that categorically. That is what a proper Deputy Attorney General, acting Attorney General of the United States, should have done. Instead, it's all Comey's fault. I mean, it's passing the buck, passing responsibility to Comey, when in fact, and I get to say it straightforwardly, maybe because she's a weak personality, or maybe out of conviction, she is clearly a co-conspirator. Peter, I'm sorry, I am sorry.
She could have, at the very least, she could have gone to the Inspector General as an ethics issue, okay? She was incumbent upon her to do that, all right? In the Oval Office, saying that maybe it wasn't the decorum. I mean, she is a deputy, okay? She is not the lead person in that. But she should have gone to the Inspector General and say, hey, I was just in a meeting here. There's no predicate for what they're talking about. And I have to be clear. I have to make official statement to the Inspector General about this. She didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And of course, Alexander Christophorus is absolutely right. I wouldn't say Comey's going to be made into the fall guy, because he is the guy that was in charge and doing it. Okay. Yes. The interesting thing will be is to see how many of them will turn and make some kind of deal. Okay. And Sally Yates, at this point in time, looks like the weakest link in all of this here. Mm-hmm. And so she's beginning to sing, and the other ones are going to start composing, I think, to save their neck. Because Comey, he talked too much. He wrote a book. He admitted everything virtually in interviews on a wide variety of cable stations. I mean, all you have to do is parse what he has said in public and in his book, and you can start connecting the dots. And now people are going to start turning on him. We have said repeatedly, week in and week out, it's all about timing. If this gets out before the election, it will be really meaningful. After the election, and if Biden's in office, it will be as if it never happened.
Yes.
Alexander Graham was, Lindsey Graham was on Maria Bartiromo, the Sunday morning future show. And he was pretty much saying that the intel reports, to sum it up, the Senate was getting different intel reports than what they actually were. In other words, information was missing and they kind of, you know, came to a different conclusion. I think that Lindsey Graham is also trying to sanitize their poor behavior during the entire Russiagate thing, because they also knew what was going on.
Yeah, he was trying to blame the FBI.
Yeah.
He deflected. You're right.
He deflected. And I don't know, this is a hunch. When I saw the questioning between Graham and Yates, you know, it was very dramatic. And Graham does have a flair for that. Going back to the Kavanaugh stuff, he likes to grandstand and has a flair for the theatrics. I think there was a lot of theatrics there between Graham and Yates. My hunch is that the Democrats and the Republicans, because they were both in on getting Trump out, mm-hmm. they're going to work together to give us a list of people that did wrong during the entire Mueller Russia
thing. And you know what? Also, add to that, Republicans and Democrats at different points in time loved and hated Comey. So it works.
Yeah, they all knew. They all were in on it. And I think they're all going to be in on it to create some sort of off ramp and get this thing to the elections. And, you know, we were saying before this this live stream, most likely Susan Rice, most likely, will be Biden's VP pick. And they're going to have to sanitize Susan Rice as well, who's a serial liar, a warmonger, a neoliberal. I mean, she's just the worst of the worst. But if they can start getting certain indictments there, Comey, maybe Clapper, maybe Brennan, I don't know, Strzok, McCabe, if they get some sort of indictments, then maybe Susan Rice can kind of, you know, skate into the VP.
Because she did the unmasking too. I mean, and then messages to herself. I mean, she's just too close. She's just too close.
She's too close. So they have to.
Can they sanitize it? Well, I mean, if you listen to Brian Stelter, is that there's no anti-Trump media. So, I mean, if they believe that kind of stuff, they'll believe that Susan Rice is an angel.
Yeah. Can I just say a few things. Firstly, I mean, Lindsey Graham's comments to me look like Lindsey Graham constructing an alibi. I mean, he says, you know, the FBI came along and lied to me. I didn't understand this. I was misled. The intelligence people misled me. We are three guys doing a YouTube channel. We figured it out all the way back in 2016. Lindsey Graham is a senator, United States senator, former prosecutor, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He has a huge staff. He wasn't able to figure it out. What, you know, three guys like us were able to do.
Was he leading the witness, Alexander?
Well, of course he was.
Absolutely. Was he leading the witness? Yes, one of the users is right. He's saying he was leading the witness.
Absolutely. That's exactly what he was doing. I mean, he's creating for himself an alibi. And, you know, you mentioned how the Republicans and the Democrats both stood by Comey. They also stood by Robert Mueller. I can remember Lindsey Graham coming along saying, you know, we've got to let Robert Mueller, this great pillar of integrity, he's got to, you know, finish this job and find out all there is to find out. As I said, we shouldn't take any of what Lindsey Graham is saying seriously. I did at one time. I'm afraid I don't anymore, now that I've seen some of the things that he was actually being shown and some of the testimony he was hearing. He cannot have believed in this thing after the autumn of 2017 at the latest. It's incredible that he ever believed in it. That's what I'm going to say about him. As for Susan Rice, she is heavily implicated, as Peter said, by the unmasking. But for her, the smoking gun, the thing that really risks pulling her down, is that disastrous memo she wrote about this meeting that happened in the Oval Office.
By the book.
Exactly, on the 5th of January. 5th of January 2017, which is, to be absolutely clear, it's becoming quite clear now, a totally dishonest memo intended to conceal what was really going on there. And that, I would have thought, the existence of that memo is reason enough to be very careful about making her vice president. But, you know, there we are.
No, the thing is that we're three rational people that have connected dots as they become available, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think we've actually been quite dispassionate over this entire time. We've been very frustrated, but I think we've been dispassionate. Now, CNN and MSNBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, they are not dispassionate, okay? And they will say, what do you mean? This is nothing. Again, I want to stress to everyone, if she becomes the VP pick, we know exactly what Fox is going to do. But what MSNBC and CNN, what they will just say, oh, come on, this is a Fox story. It's a Fox story, and they're not going to cover it. So that's the cover that Christofora is talking about, okay? Because they'll just say, it's a non-story. And this is a conspiracy. This is what Fox News does. Mm-hmm. And this is, but what is going to happen is that it's just not the waning days of the Obama administration. It's another thing, Benghazi, okay, which riveted the Republican base, okay? And we know so much more now. Oh, she openly lied about that, okay? A politician that lies is nothing really new. But, I mean, in this case, she's going to be elevated to the vice presidency, literally a heartbeat away from the presidency. Anyone that thinks that Joe Biden is going to finish 4 years in office if he's elected, they need a medical checkup, okay? So I think that, you know, this is going to be, if she is chosen, that's going to be the most divisive VP pick probably in American history.
I agree. I completely agree. I mean, she's not even, dare I say, at least I don't find her so, a particularly likable or sympathetic
individual. She's not even particularly intelligent.
Intelligent, so exactly. I mean, you know, I would keep very, very far from her. I'm sure there are better people than Susan Rice. And I would say also that, by the way, Biden has boxed himself into a corner by basically saying that he wanted a black woman VP, because that has limited his...
Has he said that?
Well, I don't think
he has. A woman of color. It's a woman he wants to pick. But I've never heard him say a woman of color. Now, we have members of the Democratic Party, people high up in the party who happen to be of color, are saying that he owes the people of the people of color in his base. But I mean, has he actually really said that? Okay, again, that this is kind of faking people out.
Yes.
What was the theory we were saying before? Yeah, Alexander.
This is one very important point I want to make about Susan Rice, which is that, of course, if she's picked as VP, as Biden's VP, and we come closer to the election, then she is protected from prosecution. You can't prosecute her in the run-up to the election. As I understand it, that is the law. So it may also be the case that there's attempts to try and leave her into that position in order to grant her some sort of immunity in the run-up to the election. So, you know, bear that in mind, because, of course, if you can't actually indict her, that may make it more difficult to pursue investigations against...
Okay, question, Alex, question. But can an investigation be started without... No, can you investigate without getting to the point of an indictment?
Oh, absolutely you can. Of course you can. I mean, investigations can definitely happen. I mean, there are all kinds of restrictions in the run-up to an election, but you can certainly investigate without indictments. Robert Mueller did to an enormous extent. He was investigating all sorts of places and people. So no, you can continue to investigate. What I am saying is, it becomes a bit more difficult the closer you get to the election. With Susan Rice, there might be legal reasons as well. I predict, by the way, we're going to get indictments by the end of this month. So that time period is not going to be such a problem, but just bear that in mind.
Okay.
I want to make a question. Okay, let's say this week she gets tipped. Now, she's not officially the vice presidential candidate. I mean, she's being asked. There has been no convention. There's no confirmation of it. Okay, so this interlude is still very fluid, right?
I mean, yes, absolutely.
Right. Okay. Okay. So, but once she gets the nomination, I agree with you, then the Justice Department will step back because they don't want to politicize it like Jim Comey did in 2016.
Yeah.
But Peter, can't you make the argument that once Biden, if he does, once he chooses Susan Rice essentially acts as a shield for Obama as well, because the closer we get to Russiagate, we start to figure out that Obama is involved in it.
Yes.
Hence Obamagate. Now, and there's no doubt that Obama knew what was going on, you know, between Comey and Brennan and Clapper and all these people. He had a clue. He was at that Oval Office meeting. But Susan Rice has always been Obama's shield. She's right, always taken the fall for Barack.
I'm going to give you a theory right now. My theory right now, okay? It's a wild one, but I think it's interesting. Joe Biden announces Susan Rice is going to be his running mate. At the end of the month, we get indictments or people close around Susan Rice in the waning days of the Obama administration. She is implicated, maybe not indicted, but implicated. And the Biden administration says, we tried. Hillary, are you available?
Yeah. We go back to Hillary Clinton.
It's not inconceivable. Well,
Biden may just choose.
That's why I said. Has he said a woman of color?
I think he has. I think he's. I don't think he said it, but I think he has promised it. Like, I think the press asked him, "Will you choose a woman of color?" And he has said yes. I don't think he's actually said, "I will choose a woman of color." But okay,
Elizabeth Warren is still available, right?
Well, Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton, as we were saying before, Hillary Clinton is the wife of Bill Clinton.
The first black president.
Exactly. So, you know, there's always a way that the fake news mainstream media can spin it. But I mean, my point on what I was asking you, Peter and Alexander, is, I mean, Susan Rice is the barrier between getting to Obama.
Yes.
I mean, she always takes the fall, always covers for Obama.
She can be a gateway as well. I think you can say
exactly. She can also be a gateway. But she's always that person. Before you get to Obama, you always have to go through Susan Rice.
I just ask you guys. I mean, I just don't see the upside in choosing her. What is the upside in choosing Susan Rice? Can you elaborate? Go ahead, guys.
Well, politically, none. I can't see any at all. I think she's a very bad candidate. The only advantage she has is she's not Kamala Harris.
She's not Kamala Harris. She ticks the boxes that the woke mainstream media and the woke elitists want.
What is so woke
and she
about
is,
her?
She's an insider. She's an insider.
A woke neocon, okay.
She's the insider they want. I mean, she is the insider they want. No doubt about it.
So many former Obama people are available. Okay, it's just going to be Obama 2.0. I mean, he's an empty vessel there, okay? I mean, they'll decide his cabinet. I mean, they're probably already have a tentative working list already for that. I mean, maybe they'll tell Joe, maybe they won't, okay? But I just don't see the upside in all of this because of Benghazi, because that for a lot of, and this is pre-Trump, a lot of people remember that, and they remember her culpability in it. And she was caught lying. I mean, all politicians lie, but I mean, she's just caught. And then that PBS interview about the unmasking, I don't know anything about it, which is a complete lie, all right? Mm-hmm. And from what we've heard that Sally Yates has been saying, I'm sure that there was a behind the closed doors briefing additionally to this. Did she know? Yeah, of course she did, okay? Of course she did. Okay, I just don't see the upside unless they really want to stick it to show that they can do it with impunity, okay? Because they're going to have the media cover it. The media will cover for them. I just think it's a very interesting potential pick.
Yeah. The order 1814 says Biden said he wants a person of color or a woman for VP, according to CBS News.
Okay.
So a person of color or a woman. for if you can.
But that's been my understanding too. That's been my understanding. Okay. I just Susan Rice just has so much baggage. Alexander McCurris is right. She politically she brings nothing to the table whatsoever other than her skin color and her gender. Okay. We've come so far since Martin Luther King, haven't we? I mean, just checking.
Yeah, but that's what they want. I mean, that's. Her gender and her color is exactly the most important boxes that they need ticked. And that's where we are today. And of course, Sleepy Joe, creepy Sleepy Joe is, yeah, sure, whatever. The guy has no idea what the hell's going on around him. So, Alexander, what would Susan Rice do if she's running the White House?
Well, what would she do? The very first thing she would do is she'd close down all the various investigations. I mean, she's in a position to do that, because though she's not, she wouldn't be running the Justice Department directly. She would be in a position to give instructions to the various intelligence organizations. She knows everything that happened. So she'd close down the investigations. The other thing she would do is she would reactivate this very aggressive foreign policy that led to disasters and debacles like Benghazi.
And you know what? Shutting down the investigations would be within her right. It wouldn't be illegal. Let's be very clear about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, absolutely, exactly.
Because because I'm going to be consistent here. Trump, as president of the United States, can fire the head of the FBI for any reason he wants. He doesn't like the ties he wears. He doesn't like his sunglasses. It doesn't matter, because that person is an employee of the executive branch, and the president can fire anyone he wants in the executive branch. He doesn't even need a reason, okay? And if we have a position, I think it's perfectly conceivable, if Biden is elected, we'll have a 25th Amendment situation in play, and we'll have an acting president, or yes, a super vice president, they'll have a term for it, and she can make these decisions, and they will be legal, and they will
absolutely
be binding.
Absolutely.
Let's be clear about this, okay? Everything is an exception because of Trump. No.
Yes, no. I mean, this is a very good point, because actually what Peter said has been thrashed out in the impeachment proceedings. The president, as the head of the executive branch, has the right to sack anybody within the executive branch that he wants. The Mueller and co. tried to construct an obstruction case against Trump based on the sacking of James Comey. And even on that essential legal principle, that whole theory fell apart. I mean, there was no obstruction anyway, as a preposterous theory, a preposterous idea, but that was clearly established over the course of those impeachment proceedings. And bear in mind, the impeachment failed. So that is now essentially the impeachment that was eventually brought failed. And those arguments were brought out over the course of that impeachment proceeding, as I well remember. So there's no doubt at all this issue is settled.
Yeah, and plus, again, I'm sure the Biden people already have a short list for the highest positions in a would-be potential Biden administration. They're going to make sure that they have, I'm sorry, I'll use the term that in the Obama administration, a wingman at the DOJ. Don't worry about that, okay? And Ray, they'll get rid of him like swatting a fly, okay? He has no friends, he has no allies, he's done nothing on the job except for not be there, just be an empty suit. So Christopher Ray, he'll have a very short tenure there. And a new attorney general will have a new director of the FBI, and they won't touch any of these. I'm going to take the term Obamagate scandals.
And let's not forget that they'll have all the mainstream media and all the social media, and all the big corporations behind them. So they'll go completely unquestioned. But Peter, let's go back to Russia and China and Nancy Pelosi. Do you think this is going to have any kind of impact in the next 3 months? I mean, we're 90 days away, essentially.
Yeah, okay, look.
I mean, they're going to rev it up. They're going to start revving up now.
Yeah, but look, this is how it's going to work. It's going to be very, very interesting. It would be comical if it weren't serious. Mm-hmm. If Trump loses, Trump's going to blame China. If Biden loses, they're going to blame Russia. Okay, so the only thing difference between 2016 and 2020 is that they'll have the Chinese there. I mean, I'm looking forward with this mail-in strategy. How many of those mail-in ballots will be in Mandarin, and how many of them will be in Cyrillic? Okay, I mean, this is, you guys, it's all within the realm of possibility. I mean, this is going to get more and more insane. How many days is it? 89 days? 88
days. 89, 88, yeah.
This is going to get more insane as we go along. And on top of it, if they push through this mail-in thing, then people are going to be voting in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. I mean, they've made sure the debates are irrelevant. They're going to say, vote now, vote now, vote now. Okay? I forget the name of the candidate. He was a progressive. I don't remember the state either, but he was a African American, and he on the heels of the protest movement, he really shot up in the polls. I mean, he was obscure, but it was mail-in, and so he peaked in his popularity when almost all the votes had already been cast in mail-ins, and so he didn't win. This is they see this, and they're going to take advantage of it. That's why they're all in on mail-in votes, because it'll make the debates irrelevant. Joe could fall asleep. It'll be, how many votes have already been cast? You see the strategy here.
Mm. Alexander, is any truth to it? China does want Biden, and Russia would prefer Trump. No, seriously, is there any truth to it?
Well, I'm going to say this. I think if the Russians have to choose between Biden and Trump, they would still, I think, go with Trump. And I'd simply say, well, first of all, let me make it very clear. They're not going to interfere in the election. They know they can't interfere in the election. They know that any attempt by them to interfere in the election would be a disaster.
Can I say something? Forget election interference. Forget I'm saying all geopolitically, diplomatically.
Geopolitically, I think Putin gets on reasonably well with Trump. I think they still think, well, with Trump, that, you know, there's all these crazies around him, but with him at least we've got somebody we can talk to. With Biden, they have no one to talk to, because Biden isn't capable of talking to them about anything. He's going to be controlled directly by the crazies to a much greater extent than Trump has ever been. So I think the Russians would perhaps prefer Biden. Perhaps prefer Trump. The Chinese, it's probably true that the Chinese on balance would rather have Biden than Trump, but for completely different reasons. Because I think they think that in any kind of negotiation, Biden would be a very soft touch with them. They know perfectly well.
Wait, that, literally.
You know, exactly. I mean, you know, put him up against Xi Jinping, and it, you know, you don't need to worry very much about who would come out on top there. But again, I think the Chinese understand, and you know, I read now the Chinese media, not just Global Times, other ones too. And I think that they understand that ultimately policies in relation to China in the United States, there's now a clear consensus about them in the United States. They become bipartisan. I think the Russians understand that about US policy towards Russia. I don't think they feel, whoever wins, that it will be a huge change. But as I said, the Russians, to some extent, would prefer Trump. The Chinese, to some extent, would prefer Biden. Both countries will say to themselves, it's nothing to do with us at the end of the day. And realistically, it's not going to make a huge amount of difference.
I would answer it in a very different way. My perspective is this, is that both Russia and China are developing contingency plans for either or, okay? Mm. That's what it is. There's no preference, okay? Because they have no control over it. But they certainly are thinking about how to deal with whatever the outcome is, if there is an outcome in November. So I don't think there, I would never, and I've been consistent on this, that there's no preferences here. There's just preparation and reacting.
You read my mind, Peter, because that's what I wanted to ask you. How do you, I can see how China and Russia can prepare for a Trump. How do you prepare for a Biden, though?
Susan Rice.
Yeah.
Susan Rice. Okay.
I mean, just pretty much saying 4 years of Obama.
Yeah. In other words. Oh, definitely. Nothing will change. Okay. That's a really sad comment. okay. Oh, what is the new meme now? Settle for Joe? Just settle for Joe, which means you're settling for Obama's grudging endorsement. Okay. So, I mean, again, Trump breaks everybody's brain. There's so little introspection of how awful the Obama administration was on all fronts, okay? Virtually everything. And they're just gonna put it back into gear, which is a disaster. Why was Trump elected in the first place? Nobody wants to have that autopsy on the left. And now we're gonna go into this election without that autopsy, without that introspection. And one thing I've been thinking about quite a bit lately about the polls, I'm beginning to change my position a little bit, is that I think anyone that is polled and they're a Trump supporter, they probably won't tell you the truth. They probably won't, because he's been so demonized by the media for so long, is that people just say, oh, I don't know, you know, I don't have no opinion, at all. They may have a very strong opinion, which puts everything out of whack right now, because we don't really know what the body politic really thinks. And that's not good. What I do worry about is that when you look at like Fox or MSNBC, they're both locked into a worldview that they can't move. And I think it's not doing a good service to the viewers. It was a few days ago, or it was a few weeks ago, there was a writer in the New York Times that said, Joe Wheatley isn't the best candidate. You know, they almost exiled that woman forever on YouTube, on Twitter, on everything. There's no wiggle room here, which is really bad, because we're in the middle of a pandemic and the worst economic turndown since the Great Depression. This is a train wreck of unbelievable magnitude, because I'm gonna stick to my position. I don't think there's going to be uniform acceptance of the decision in November. There won't be.
No, November's going to be difficult.
It's going to be very difficult unless one or the other wins a landslide, which I don't expect at all. So it's going to be a very difficult situation. It's going to be a very difficult situation. And we must remember that the Democrats have never accepted the November 2016 result. So why should they accept the November 2020 result if it goes against them too? We will be hearing more about Russia if Trump wins in November. Of that, I am sure.
It's going to be an interesting next 3 months. Let's close out the live stream, guys, and talk about Flynn. Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about Obamagate and Russiagate. Flynn today, I believe, is his, he has a court appearance. That's correct, right, Alexandra?
Absolutely. This afternoon. Before Judge Sullivan, so we'll see what Judge Sullivan does.
What's the situation?
I'm going to make a guess that Judge Sullivan is going to try and postpone again, for the simple reason that he's now got this hearing coming up before the Court of Appeals to the DC District, where they'll be reconsidering the mandamus order, and I think he will want to wait, if he's wise, if he's any sanity at all, until that happens. Of course, he could go for broke and sentence Flynn. It's possible. You could sentence Flynn.
You really think that's a possibility?
Well, I would have said, if you'd asked me this question 3 months ago, Peter, I would have said it is impossible. It is inconceivable. Any such suggestion would be insane. There has been nothing sane about the whole case against Flynn. So I cannot exclude that possibility. I don't think it will happen, but...
This is a trend here, just thinking about the unthinkable. I mean, before the Flynn case, having a judge like that, completely defy the DOJ was unthinkable. I've never heard of this in my entire life, that something like this could happen.
Peter, I have never heard in my life of a judge instructing a lawyer to represent him in proceedings in a superior court. I've never known anything like that to happen before. And yet that is the scenario we are in. I mean, it is the world turned upside down. The whole Flynn case is the world turned upside down. But it's quite clear that there is still this implacable agenda to get Flynn, not because of Flynn himself anymore, but because of what Flynn represents and of Flynn's critical importance in the events that we now call, which have been called Russiagate. So letting him go, accepting that he's innocent, is something that people of a certain view, political view, who clearly include Judge Sullivan, are just not prepared to do.
So what you're saying is that the conviction will be will legitimize the entire Russiagate. It'll show that it had something. Something was there.
Yes,
there.
Yes. Right? Yes. That's the essential priority. Whereas
Manafort, that was just a process crime.
Exactly.
Nothing to do with Trump. Okay.
Exactly.
Had nothing to do with their relationship. Okay.
Exactly.
And everybody else. But this is the only one where they can say, "See, we got a conviction in Russiagate."
Exactly.
Yeah, so Peter. And then the media is going to run with it.
Yes.
I mean, they're going to run with it.
Yes. Yes. But it's the key reason why I still think, even if that happens, especially if that happens, by the way, and that he's sentenced today, still I think Trump should not pardon him. I would continue to pursue this through the court system. First argue it at the Court of Appeal of the D.C. District, then take it to the Supreme Court of the United States, which is, again, by the way, what Trump did with Roger Stone. Pardon Roger Stone for his sentence, but leave open the appeal process in order to get these people to establish their innocence. If it all fails and Trump loses in November, then he can pardon these people and let them out. But I think the stakes are so high in this politically and legally that I would let the appeal processes take their course.
Yeah, I see that. I see the logic in that. But on the other hand, how does it move the needle one way or another? If you hate Trump, you already hate him. This is not going to change anyone's mind. There isn't going to be someone, "Well, I was thinking about voting for Trump, but he pardoned Flynn." I don't think such a person exists. Though I understand your calculus. And I would prefer it that way to see the process. I hate seeing these institutions being destroyed. They're very very easy to destroy. They're very hard to build up again, okay?
Yes.
However, a man's liberty is at stake, okay? So what's the point of having rights if they're not respected?
I accept that. Look, this is, again, I reiterate, if come November, the situation is not resolved with Flynn and Trump loses, I would then pardon Flynn, because clearly he's entitled to his liberty. As far as I'm concerned, he's a completely innocent man. I mean, completely innocent man. In my opinion, Stone is not guilty. Flynn is actually innocent. He didn't do the things that were alleged about him. Stone did certain things which were stupid. I don't think he had any real criminal intention, and that's why I say he is not guilty. But Flynn is actually innocent. I think both Stone and Flynn should be pardoned, by the way, because in Stone's case, it is so completely disproportionate. But I would let the thing take its course through the appeal system, partly because I still think there is a political advantage to doing so. I think Trump is able to say on the campaign trail, these people went after Michael Flynn. They framed him. They did all these bad things against him. It might cut through, at least to some people, but primarily because of the institutions. You can't just have a judge go rogue in this way. If you allow a judge to go rogue, the entire legal system of the United States is in jeopardy. And that's what's happening.
Peter, if you keep Flynn, I mean, Sullivan has done his job, I think. He's gotten his marching orders from the Dems and from Obama, and he's done his job. He's kept this thing alive. Most likely he'll try to keep it alive some more. I mean, if you can keep this story going, this Flynn thing, and you have the MSNBCs and the CNNs that actually say Flynn is guilty ad nauseum, Flynn is guilty, he lied, he's guilty, he's guilty. That's the goal, isn't it? Just keep this thing going a little bit longer so that Russiagate doesn't completely collapse in their minds.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where we are. They need it as a line in the sand to somehow legitimize the ridiculousness of their behavior and their rhetoric for 3.5 years. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It had nothing to do with Flynn, if he's guilty or innocent. It's a purely political issue. And it legitimizes their Russiagate delusion. That's all it does.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Man's liberty is at stake here. That's the kind of people you're dealing with right now.
I completely agree. I should just quickly say there is one other possibility with Sullivan. I don't expect it, but it's possible that he could dismiss the case against Flynn. I mean, if you look at the way it's worked out with the DC Court of Appeals, it could be that there's been a deal done, which is to enable Sullivan to retain some face. They've agreed to review this thing until, and at the same time leave him an opportunity to dismiss the case against Flynn himself. I don't believe it, but I'm just throwing that in.
Would the Senate impeach him?
Yes, absolutely. But of course, if for the Senate to impeach him, it would need a Republican majority because the Democrats
are before the election.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I don't see why not. It could be done, but I don't really see much sign of it. I think for that to happen, though, there would still need to be a legal finding against him by a superior court that he has acted improperly. And the time frame is very tight, but this is such a serious case. I personally think the Supreme Court of the United States would want to deal with it very fast.
I wonder if we're going to see some intel leaks about Russian meddling coming up. Or more like Ukraine gate stuff. I'm serious. I wonder if we're going to see some stuff coming up.
I got news for you. Wait. We'll be implicated somehow. Okay.
I'm just trying to think what's going to be the 3 month thing that they're going to try to pin on Trump now. I mean, that's the Trump.
Yeah, well, there's got to be some October surprise out there just to finish it off, right?
Yeah. But can I just point out? I mean, you know, all these anonymous leaks. I mean, I think it's now becoming very, very clear that not all of those leaks came from actual people in the intelligence services. I mean, the media talks to all kinds of people. And, you know, you can then say anonymous former officials. I mean, yeah, well informed about what is going on. Doesn't actually have to be the intelligence services.
Brennan will whisper in someone's ear.
Absolutely.
And they'll tell a presenter, and then a presenter on television will ask him and say, well, you know, I've heard the same thing. He's the one that's leaking it. I mean, as far as we all know, he still has his intelligence clearance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How that happens is insanity to me.
I know.
Yes. All right. All right, guys. We have two super chats, and then we have about 20, 25 minutes. We can take some questions as well from the live stream as well. So let's just do the super chats real quick. I'll jump into the live stream, see what people are talking about, and if they have any questions for us, and we'll wrap it up. Mm. How does that sound? Good?
Perfect. Good.
All right, cool. Yeah. Hugh Evans, €20 super chat. Thank you, Hugh, very much. From Valley S, a $20 super chat. Thank you very much, Valley S. And from Triumph, $5 super chat. If you watch D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, you will see Susan Rice is a character of Silas Stoneman's housemaid. Art imitates life.
Oh, I'm not very long time since I saw that film.
All right, let's see.
Remember, a very famous Democrat had that played in the White House. That was Woodrow Wilson.
Absolutely.
Okay? As a Democrat, actually a progressive Democrat, he is the first president of the United States that institutionalized racism in the federal government.
All right. Okay, let me jump into the live stream and see if you guys have any questions that you would like us to answer, any topics that you'd like us to talk about for the next 15, 20 minutes. Mm. Let me see here. People talking about Libya.
Yeah.
Brian sent us a €10 super chat. Thank you very much, Brian. Libya trying to get back to normal.
So sad. Beirut story just is so painful. So many more videos have come to light on that horrific moment. I mean, the terror in people's eyes, it's so heart-wrenching and so avoidable. My God.
All right, from Alan Watson at the Duran, is Western democracy finished?
Well, I'm beginning to wonder whether it even exists anymore, actually. I mean, I think this is the problem. When we have a, just going back to what we've been talking about, when we have a judge behaving in this way and 9/10 of the media support him in doing what he's doing, I'm talking about Sullivan and Flynn now, then it seems to me that an awful lot of people in the media either have forgotten what democracy is, which is a system which is built on law, or they no longer care about it. And, you know, as far as they're concerned, they live in a world of winner takes all, which is not what democracy is supposed to be about. If democracy is dying in the West, it is dying internally. It is dying because of behavior like this.
Well, okay. The thing is that they've been able to delude themselves into this higher calling, and they don't realize or lie to themselves that they're destroying institutions and ideas because of their belief that they are more they have a higher morality. This is how institutions die. This is how ideas die. And it's a real tragedy, because we, particularly in the West, particularly in the United States, a real tragedy faces tens of millions of people. This is when you need the system to work, okay? And it's not. And future historians will say how could they be so short-sighted, and they are short-sighted.
Yeah. Absolutely. Can I just say, Peter, what you've just said about people who think they have a higher wisdom and must guide the, you know, the benighted people who don't understand these things because we have a higher wisdom. I can remember as a child in Greece, people used to talk about the military in Greece being like that. That was a deep state, and of course it eventually became an outright dictatorship. That is a profoundly anti-democratic outlook. The problem is the people who talk like this in the United States talk as if they are the Democrats. The completely inverted reality. It's not, democracy isn't about the people anymore, it's about them, which is a very strange and very disturbing thing.
It really, what's happened is that you have this kind of professional managerial class that embedded itself into politics in the 1960s. Remember the best and the brightest, the McNamara's and people like that. You know, if that's prototype has embedded themselves into the political system, and they do feel morally superior because of their education, mm-hmm. because of their credentials. Yes. And so it has actually less to do with an ideology than it does about a certain identification in a class, because this managerial professional class, what's really interesting about it is that you can jump into it. You can become credentialed. You have to remember, before, in the Republicans and the Democrats, they were very much of great family pedigrees of the Democratic Party and of the Republican Party. And then what you had in the late 50s and into the 1960s, you had a replacement of these grantee families and names into a professional managerial class. And unfortunately, because of what's happened in academia in the last 30 years, they've this professional managerial class become woke. This is like really toxic right now, okay? Because not only do they feel that they deserve, because of their credentials, because of where they went to school and their connections, and they've been able to generate wealth at the same time, is that they cannot conceive of that, you know, rubes like us have any right to say anything, because we haven't credentialed ourselves the way you're supposed to do that. That's how they impoverish tens of millions of people in America to get educations that are worthless right now, okay? Worthless.
All right, from Sanja J, Trump's executive order. Can we comment about that?
A little late, and it's dubious if it's legal.
I think that perhaps late, but the legality of it is neither here nor there, because we're
election. I'm glad he did it.
I'm glad he did it. Absolutely.
I've been saying he should be doing it months ago.
Yes. If the Democrats want to challenge it legally, then I think let them bring it on is what I would say exactly.
I want them to. Yeah, I want them to sue the president for trying to help unemployed people. I would love to watch that, okay?
Exactly.
Now the thing is that the most effective way to do it would be through Congress, because they control the purse strings, okay? again, you know, I would prefer the president of the United States not rule through executive order. But this is an emergency, and I'm all for it, okay? Mm-hmm. It's cumbersome. It's going to be difficult to do. It won't be particularly fast. Legally, it's very dubious, but we can set that aside. I agree with Alexander Mercurius. Mm-hmm. But it is something that it should have been done a while back, because then Trump could have gotten ahead of the game, ahead of everybody, and particularly, I must stress here, get ahead of the GOP, okay? So I'm glad he did it. I just think it's a day late and a buck short. We'll see where it goes.
Right. If a president has to step down and the VP takes over, who becomes the new VP?
The new president will choose.
All right.
That's what happened with
Gerald Ford.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Gerald Ford, he became president after Nixon, and he tapped Rockefeller. Okay. But you still have to. There's still a confirmation. So.
All right. We just got a super chat from Hugh Evans, $20 super chat. What do you think about the German Wirecard fraud scandal with the OPCW weirdness added? Does it look like a replacement scheme for the Epstein Ghislaine Maxwell operation now that the scheme is no longer in operation?
Well, I don't think it's a replacement scheme, but it seems a most extraordinary affair. I mean, we did a video about this. I mean, the Wirecard thing is getting ever more zany. What has happened, to those of our viewers who don't know, is that it turns out that the senior, the chief operations officer of Wirecard, this is this utterly fraudulent, completely corrupt German tech company, which has now collapsed like a cake, owing billions of dollars, except, of course, many of those billions of dollars have been squirreled away in foreign accounts all around the world, and which was involved also with mafiosos in Italy and indeed Russia and Ukraine, all kinds of crazy places. Anyway, it turns out that Jan Marsalek, who was its chief operations officer, who's a very strange person in himself, was going around London in 2018, with classified documents from the OPCW, which were the documents which did the entire analysis of the chemical that was used or allegedly used in the Skripal attack. So these are extraordinarily sensitive documents. How did he get hold of them? How was he showing them to all these people who were apparently looking at him with astonishment and asking him, where did you get them? And we have as yet no answers. And that man has now disappeared. Mr. Marsalek has disappeared. His whereabouts are unknown. He might be in Russia, according to the Financial Times. No reason to think he is, but that's what the Financial Times thinks. Or perhaps he's feeding the fish somewhere. I have no idea.
All right. From Liam Swiles, 1499 Super Chat. How far could the legal action against Patreon realistically go? P.S. Shout out to Ryan Dawson, who was recently ovened from Patreon, even while about to have a newborn baby. Patreon, you guys are on the Patreon? No, Alexander? No.
Well,
no?
I don't know how far it's going to go, but I think it could go quite a long way, because from what I've understood, mm-hmm. the people who are pushing this case are very well funded. Alex, you have a view. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably do a video on the
yeah,
Patreon
I think we
story.
Should do.
Actually,
yeah.
Vox Day, who is partnered with Owen Benjamin.
Yes.
And it's Owen Benjamin's fans, the Bears, that are going after Patreon in arbitration, I want to say. Vox Day did say that Patreon did win a couple of arbitration cases, but on the balance, Patreon is in trouble. I mean, there's no way they're going to wiggle out of this one. They changed their terms in the middle of banning Owen and all his fans. I mean, they got involved in a contract between Owen Benjamin and his patrons. Mm. And they screwed everybody there. And then they tried to go back and change their terms. It just didn't work out. It didn't work out. And they're in trouble. Will they go bankrupt or anything like that? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I mean, but then again, who knows? They've screwed over Owen Benjamin. They screwed over Sargon of Akkad. They screwed Lawrence Southern. There's a lot of people that wouldn't mind telling their fans to also go after Patreon as well as Owen's fans did. So it's going to be an interesting story. We'll see how it plays out. We'll be watching that story, though. It's an interesting one. Don Costa sent us $4.99. And we'll do a couple more questions here, and we'll wrap it up. The Order wants to know, Turkey issue update, please. Well, Turkey's sent more ships into the Mediterranean.
Well, they certainly are. I mean, the other thing is that the lira, the Turkish lira, is has been under more pressure. Turkey's running through its reserves, what are left of them, very, very fast. Economy's not looking good in Turkey. And, of course, they're becoming more aggressive again in the Eastern Mediterranean. So we'll see what happens. It's a dangerous situation in Turkey, always, at all times. Whenever Erdogan is in trouble, he pushes out. And he does so partly in order to push people to give him financial help. So it's a complicated game, but we shall see. I think it's perhaps something we should do a follow-up video on. Yeah,
we'll do a follow-up video. Two more questions here. Does the UK intend to defund the Metropolitan Police also?
Oh, no,
UK
I don't think
doing
so.
Doing any defunding?
No, I don't think so, no. I mean, the Conservative government is completely opposed to those ideas. Okay. And Keir Starmer, who is the Labour leader, has ruled it out. So we're not in the same situation as in the United States. Not at all.
And the last question, which a lot of people are talking about, Putin gave the vaccine to his daughter. Will Russia sell the vaccine at cost to screw over Gates? Do you guys have any opinion or news about this vaccine that came out, or what's going on there?
Right. The first thing to say is that they've said that they will share it at cost. The big unanswered and unanswerable question, at least by me, is how effective this vaccine is and how dangerous or not it is. I suspect it is not dangerous, but how effective it is, I'm not going to try and guess. I mean, I really don't know. I don't have that kind of technical knowledge. But they do say that they will make it available to everybody. So we shall see. And I gather the markets reacted well to the news.
We'll see.
Peter Alexander, what was the reason that they mentioned his daughter takes it? I mean, is it a PR thing, an optics thing?
What's the reasoning behind
making a statement like that?
It is an optics thing. And for, I think, a lot of Russians, by the way, are very historically minded people. I think it relates to an event very famous in Russian history and in Russian folk history, was that in the 18th century, Catherine the Great, in order to persuade people to take smallpox vaccine, which of course lots of people were very skeptical about at that time, took it herself. And, this is a famous event. So I think Putin saying that his daughter, a woman like Catherine the Great, has taken the vaccine is a way of telling the Russian people, this is safe, I'm trusting my own daughter with it. And no doubt he will take it himself soon. So I think this is what that was all about. I think it was intended basically to provide reassurance to people, but also to remind them of that very famous event in Russian history.
Okay. All right. We'll wrap it up there, guys. Anything else you guys want to talk about or touch upon?
Well, I mean, can I just say the political situation in Britain is becoming very complicated at the moment. And there's a lot of ructions going on within the Labour Party, which we might want to take a look into at the present time. But it seems that Boris Johnson is, despite having problems with the pandemic and a difficult economy, is once again blessed with good opponents because the Labour Party is consuming itself in legal battles. So it's quite an extraordinary thing to see. We do not have an effective opposition in Britain. That is absolutely my view. So that's an interesting thing. And it does have implications about what is going to happen with Brexit at the end of this year, because it now looks increasingly as if it is for Boris Johnson to decide what sort of Brexit we're going to become. But the challenges to it are not really coming together. And just to go over a subject that Alex and I last year spent hours talking about, there was a fascinating article about the second referendum campaign in the Financial Times. It went on forever. It became absolutely clear when you read it that the people who were running that campaign were all the new Labour people, Peter Mandelson, Alistair Campbell, all the rest, and they were going to Tony Blair, and he was giving them the instructions. So Alex, I, and Peter, we figured it out that it was Tony Blair who was really running the opposition to Brexit last year, and we were right. And if you go to the Financial Times and find this impossibly long article, you will see it there.
Tony Blair is like a bad cold that won't go away.
Well,
and I'm being very generous in my language.
Indeed. He's very careful. The Financial Times article is very careful. It only mentions Blair's name once. It does say, you know, how all of these new Labour people, Peter Mandelson, Alistair Campbell, various others, were running it. And then it slips out that some of the people in the campaign were getting very annoyed about how these people were going off and talking all the time to the great leader, Tony Blair, to get his advice, should one say instructions.
He's Britain's version of Hillary, you know, you just can't get rid of them.
You can't get rid of him, exactly.
And you know, one of the most dreadful thoughts that enters my mind from time to time is that Obama is probably gonna opine for at least 3 more decades. God, can you? Yes. Wrap your head around that.
Well, indeed. Actually, that's a very good point, because it seems to me that Obama and Blair have more in common in some ways than many people realize. I mean, they're both very manipulative personalities.
They're both pure evil. Peter, what are you checking out this week?
I'm checking out everything. I'm officially on vacation, so, you know, I'm just kind of taking it step by step. I won't be traveling because of the restrictions. So I'm just going to keep myself busy, and I'll probably see you guys shortly.
Cool. We have 2 more super chats, guys. Let's knock them out. These are right down our alley, I think. Yeah. Brando Commando just woke up. Not sure if you guys talked about this yet, but what are your thoughts on the Belarusian elections and the protests?
Well, we were talking about this, Alex and I, just before we did this. I mean, there is clearly a very complicated intrigue about these elections, which I haven't figured out. Firstly, I do not believe that Lukashenko won 80% of the vote. I do not believe that his opponent won 80% of the vote, as she is claiming. I think that Lukashenko still has a lot of support in Belarus. Yeah. I think the security forces in Belarus are disciplined and efficient and completely loyal to him. I think the protests that happened on Sunday at night and last night were smaller, actually, than I'd expected. And I don't think the police forces have had much difficulty containing them. But now we've had this extraordinary development today of the leader of the opposition party. She's now fled to Lithuania, given an extraordinary interview there in which she's basically accepted that she ran away. And I have to say, I felt extremely sorry for her, because it was quite clear to me that she had never really wanted to become involved in challenging Lukashenko, but that she'd been maneuvered into doing it, and that it wasn't a real campaign, and that she wasn't a real candidate for the presidency. So I think that all these attempts, clearly there's been some kind of color revolution attempt of some sort to give the only name to this that I can. But it seems to be collapsing, partly because the crowds didn't come out in big enough numbers, but also partly because the person they were going to crown as leader clearly doesn't really believe in it at all. And as I said, has run away. So it's very strange. There's a lot going on in here, which I don't understand. I want to make it very clear that I'm not a Lukashenko fan by any means. I accept entirely that these results we're getting are not real. I would also say the opposition claims are not real either. But whatever was happening, it seems that it's over and Lukashenko is back in charge. That's how it looks to me at the moment.
One has to convince me with very solid evidence that Lukashenko didn't get 50% plus one vote, okay?
Yeah.
You have to prove that to me. And you better have something definitive and concrete and tangible. Yes. Because you have to realize most of the people who are eligible to vote in Belarus work for the state. Okay, state workers vote for incumbents. Okay, they want to keep their job. That's the way it is all around the world, and Belarus is no exception. Having said that, I agree with Alexander Mikuris. I'm no big fan of Lukashenko and his son that is being groomed to take his place. What's really interesting is how it's being played in Western media is that, Lukashenko is trying to play Russia against Europe. It's kind of childish, okay? The Russians are exasperated by Lukashenko, okay? And one of the things, and just pure luck on the side of Lukashenko, is that one of the most important valuable exports that that Belarus have are petroleum products. And the last most, and the most modern refinery, the last one built in the Soviet Union, was built in Belarus, okay? And now they're the sole owner of it. So they get relatively cheap oil from the Russians, and then they turn it into high quality petroleum goods and export it. Well, what everybody knows where the oil price is right now. So even with that added advantage, he's in trouble here. But you know, the thought that the Russians are going to do everything they can to bolster Lukashenko, or they're going to do everything they can to get rid of him, both are false. Okay, yes. He's there. Okay, yes. And until you can convince me otherwise, he got at least 50% plus one vote. Okay, other than that, it's theater.
I agree with that. I would also add, Peter, we've also had results from elections in various countries around the world where Belarusians have voted overseas. And the results tend to conform with the picture that you've given, which is that he has a solid base of support in the country, especially from public sector workers. He also has a lot of support amongst Belarusians generally. Anyway, we've now just had a tweet from the opposition leader. Belarusians, I call for prudence and respect to law. I don't want bloodshed and violence. I'm asking you not to clash with the police, not to take to the streets. So it looks as if she's gone to Lithuania and has called this whole thing, this whole protest movement off. I suspect a lot of people will be very disappointed and angry with her, but that's what she's done. She clearly didn't believe in this and was clearly being manipulated.
One has to wonder who did believe in her. Was it the National Endowment for Democracy? Did they believe in her? Was it an NGO?
I always say to people,
democracy is the future, and I just say, well, if it's the future, let it work itself out, okay? Yes. You don't need to push it, okay?
Yes.
So, Lukashenko, if he stays or he goes, it's of no importance to me, okay? But outside influencing, that does bother me. Okay, because it's always the same people that are doing it, okay? And they know best for the people of Belarus. No, they don't. They never do, okay? And I'm going to agree with Alexander Mikheiris. I've read a lot of different things, a lot of weird things, with these Russian, quote-unquote, commandos, and then the involvement of the Ukrainian government in that. I mean, it is a lot of really dirty, dirty plotting going on here, okay? So, again, you have to convince me he didn't get 50% plus one. Other than that, then this is just kabuki theater as usual.
Okay, Star Trooper Esper, quote, deter Russia and avoid peace in Europe. $2 super chat. That's a quote from Mark Esper. Deter Russia and avoid peace in Europe.
Well, what they're really trying, what they've been trying to do actually is provoke Russia. And they're doing it all the time. And I think they're getting very frustrated that the Russians are not letting themselves get provoked. I know that causes some of Russia's fans around the world to be exasperated and talk about Russian weakness. But it's not weakness, it's strength. You just wait the other side out.
Restraint is strength, yeah. Okay? Particularly when the onslaught from the outside is non-stop, okay? Restraint is strength, and I admire it.
Okay, from Liam 799 super chat, have my new magic mug, can confirm it keeps my tea hot and my beer cold, is currently freezing. All right, here's my magic mug.
I've got the United
and
States.
The final super chat
you got the Croatia one?
No, I've got UK, but the Croatia one's going up tomorrow, most likely. Yeah, tomorrow. I've got that one, the Croatia one. And a couple other ones too. Netherlands is going up, and I think Hungary is also going up. So I've got some more countries on the lineup. Vladimir Sirma, €5 super chat, the final one, and we'll sign out. Why the media doesn't really talk about Trump's war with pedophilia? I guess related to Epstein and stuff like that, maybe?
Yes,
Well,
maybe why the media isn't talking about Epstein that much, maybe?
I Trump breaks everyone's brain, and Epstein breaks a lot of brains too, okay? And so I can't answer that question directly, but I'm glad someone mentioned Epstein, because where's that story going, okay? And I'd really like to stress to everyone, there's a lot of fake news out there, so be very careful. When you somebody was saying that Fauci's sister, how did it go? It was Fauci's wife is Maxwell's sister, which of course is patently false. But I saw that being people sharing that on Facebook. Okay, so be careful. Be careful about these things, particularly on that story.
That's absolutely true. I mean, there's an awful lot of fake news. But to come to the question, the reason they're not talking about Trump and Epstein is precisely because, of course, Trump comes out well out of the Epstein affair, and the various people that do not seem to be coming out so well are people who are generally and overwhelmingly oppose Trump. This is not a good story for the media at this time. They're very uncomfortable about it, which is why they don't want to cover it, as they perhaps they should do. And I had
I think all media, I mean, from Fox all the way over to MSNBC and CNN, everybody is really scared of this story, really scared of it, okay?
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I wondered whether we would even get this far after Epstein died. After his death, I had wondered whether the whole thing would quietly fade away. I'm very relieved it hasn't. Very relieved it hasn't. I think there's a good chance still that we will get to some of the truth. Perhaps not all of the truth, but to some of the truth.
That's the operative word, some of the truth. Because Alexander Christopher, I'm very grateful that he did two episodes of Crosstalk on the topic. We had, what was her name? Jennifer DeMaster?
Jennifer, yes.
Yeah, which was absolutely brilliant. And I think we really got a lot closer to that story than in an analytical way than most people were willing to touch it. And I'm really appreciative of that. And believe me, even in my vacation perch, if something happens, I'll be knocking on your door, Alex.
Well, we covered a lot of stories, Peter, with Epstein and also with Weinstein. People forget. A lot of people didn't want to touch the Harvey Weinstein story, but we covered it.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You
know, no one talks about Harvey Weinstein anymore, but
indeed,
pretty bad things.
Indeed. Even though, again, you know, talking about connections. I mean, we had a discussion, Alex and I, videos coming out. And of course, Richard Dearlove, one of the people who is the former head of MI6, friend of Tony Blair's, mastermind of Russiagate, as it turns out, close friend of Christopher Steele's, before a crucial meeting in which all of these people in London got together and, you know, started talking to Carter Page. He was at a party in the Rocky Mountains in the United States, hosted by some unnamed billionaire, and Harvey Weinstein was there. So who knows?
As I always like to say, and I think it's worth repeating often, is there isn't much Russia or Russians in Russiagate.
Yeah. That's right. As somebody once, some famous man, I don't remember who he was, once said, all is connected. So there you go.
We'll leave it there and we'll sign off. Guys, if you have any countries, I see in the live stream, if you have any countries that you want to put on a mug, just please send it my way. Just drop it in the comments below and I'll get those up in time. Peter Lavelle, host of RT's Crosstalk in Moscow. Thank you very much, Peter. And Alexander Merkurs, the Oracle of London in London. Thank you very much. Thank you to everybody that joined us on this live stream. Thank you, Gloria, for that $20 super chat. Hi, guys, and hi, pets. Thank you very much, Gloria, for that. All the pets also say hello. And we are signing off. Take care, everybody.